Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cybersecurity Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Amanda Davis. How are you doing?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. No worries. Listen, nice to chat to you before we hit record. Sounds to me like you've been killing it, smashing it, secured a few quality engineers recently, yeah?
Yes, it's definitely been a great last couple of weeks for sure. It's the engineers are tough.
They are. I think the market's tracking up a little bit slightly, and it's an interesting time. And yeah, thanks for joining, Amanda. It's going to be nice to have a fellow recruiter on the show. There's people out there having a tough time, and there's people out there just really value hearing two recruiters talk, and we'll talk about do's and don'ts in hiring processes and what guys and girls out there should and shouldn't be doing. But for people that don't know you, Amanda, I'm just going to do an intro for you. Feel free to let me know if I get any of this wrong. But yeah, started back in 2013 as a professional recruiter for Career Personnel Service. You then went on to be an operations manager and senior recruiter for Integrity Staffing Services. You were there for almost 5 years. You were then over at State Farm. You were then talent acquisition at TechStream Solutions. You were then at the Jonas Group as a recruiter. And you are currently at Axion as a talent acquisition specialist. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. You got it right. There was quite a bit of movement here since 2020, but I've definitely found my home at Axion, and I'm glad to be there.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, first of all, Amanda, what's I'll start where we always like to start, which is what do you get up today? What's it like recruiting on the tools, doing things, how you find the things? What's a professional day like in the life of Amanda?
Oh my, the life of a recruiter is always exciting, right? So you never know what's going to happen. But the biggest thing is just staying connected, constantly stirring things up, seeing who you can connect with. And I use LinkedIn. I stay active on LinkedIn regularly throughout every day, connect with people on LinkedIn Recruiter. And then because of the clearance requirement for Axion, we use a lot of clearance jobs. And then I'm old school too, so I still actually use our internal applicant tracking system to find people. People look at me crazy, but to be honest, that's where I find my best people. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Just talking all day, what we love to do anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting to hear you say you still use the system and stuff like that, because what I've learned over the years is it's like that multi-channel approach that works well. I think the trap we can fall in is we'll have some success maybe over the phone or on email, or maybe loads of success on LinkedIn, and we'll think that's the only way to recruit. But it's true what you said, like you've got to explore. It might be the old school phone, might be meeting up for a coffee, might be a text message. If you don't shut off any channel, I think you're always going to be better.
Absolutely. Yeah, You definitely have to be able to pivot. And sometimes you do forget. And then it's nice to go back to that, what we call the honey hole, and go back through some of those applications that you haven't been through in a while. And people that maybe weren't available before are available. And so it's just a rhythm.
Yeah, that's a massive thing in the security cleared space, isn't it? Just people coming on and off the market. And you think perhaps there's nothing happening, but there kind of is. You've got to be persistent and open-minded, but that's what recruitment's all about.
Absolutely. Timing is everything.
It is, yeah. So Amanda, I mentioned at the start, there's some tough things going out in the market. I do think the market's tracking up quite a bit now. But I know there'll be people out there struggling. When people are applying for jobs for you, what kind of things do you look for that make you view that particular guy or girl in a positive life? Kind of what's your ideal profile that you're on the lookout for that gets you excited?
So if you'd asked me this question prior to me joining the defense industry, I would have said longevity. But now in this industry, it's really all about requirements. So the government has only so many ways that they can measure someone's ability to do the job. And so now it's degree and years of experience. So when I'm looking at resumes, the ideal profile has exactly what the government needs. That's not always possible. And sometimes we have to talk to them and say, hey, this person meets A and B. We think we can get to C this way. So I think people just being clear and concise with what they know and what those skills really mean in the market overall, right? Because sometimes people did things and the way they word it, you're just like, wait, what did you do? And then when you talk to them, you're like, oh, okay. So you have this set of skills. And I think just being concise and using terms that we can all understand, that's probably the most helpful when I'm looking at resumes.
Yeah, cool. You can get it. But I've seen it with folks out of the military background where they are really good, but their resumes just don't show it. And they're really good as well. And you just wouldn't know if you've been on the phone. I think sometimes they get looked after when they're coming out of the military, but sometimes they just don't.
Yeah, it really depends. You have to be your own advocate and be proactive. But they do have a lot of tools in place, resources for people, and they've gotten better. It really gets better all the time. But yeah, some of the things on their resume, if they're leading people through the desert in combat, I don't know how to translate that. So I need to talk to you, or you need to put something in there that translate into this market. And I've gotten better about noticing those things. But yeah, sometimes it's difficult.
Yeah, cool. So Amanda, I always think when it comes to resume formatting and how to display it, I know like some recruitment agencies send out branded resumes and stuff like that. And I always feel like you can ask people about resume formatting. You can ask four or five different people and get two different answers, or ask 10 people and get five different answers. It'd just be nice to hear what's your thoughts, views, and opinions on how a resume should be formatted for the listeners out there.
Sure. So I think, first of all, I read a statistic a while back, and it says that a recruiter spends on average 6 seconds scanning a resume. So that's not a lot of time. And to be honest, it may not be very much more than that for me, depending on the day and the time and how many things I have going on. And so I like to see a clear, concise resume. You don't need formatting. You don't need pictures. You don't need designs. I just need to know who you are, where you are, what you want to do, what you have done. And so education and then past jobs chronologically, I think that is the easiest way for me to read a resume. I think that when people build a whole page of skills and what they can do and then put their job history at the bottom, that's just difficult for me to weed through. And so I don't prefer that type of resume, although I don't know what other people are saying. I'd be curious to hear if someone likes those.
Yeah, ones. I think the thing is, it's like you mentioned 6 seconds there. If people have got a load of stuff on there, we almost just want people to hit us with the most important bits first, or without sounding rude, we just want people to get to the point. Let's say if we're really busy. I was talking to someone the other day, they say they're getting about an average of 4 applicants per job. I don't know, it might be a bit different in the security cleared space for you, but wow. When you're going through a lot of apps and there is only so many hours in the day, and it's, I think that getting to the point and just being clear and concise and just getting the important stuff to stand out, I think it's going to get people results and get people interviews quicker, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people don't like to do this because it takes time. But any time that you can look at a job description and that you have that experience, but you don't have it worded the same way on your resume, take the time to rewrite it. You're not lying. You have that experience. You just said it in a different way. Just line it up with what in the job description to the extent that it matches, and that is a guaranteed way to get noticed above someone else. But like I said, that takes time, and I understand everyone can't do that, but it definitely would help.
Yeah. I don't know. I say it might be different, Amanda, if the bulky stuff is security clear, but how many applicants are you dealing with? Are you seeing off an advert? Are the volumes still quite high for you? Or
it just depends on the market. It swings. I would say we definitely don't get 400. But we probably get anywhere from 10 to 40, 50 every week, 2 weeks. But that's for just one job. And then if you add that by, multiply that by 13, 14 jobs, that could be quite a few. And then we do have to sift through them to see what rises to the top. But yeah, for the security, I would say probably about 40 per job.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting for people to hear that, because it just shows the importance of standing out and stuff like that. I think sometimes if you've got 13, 14 jobs and there's 30, 40 applicants across each job, it's a lot of people to deal with. So I think stuff like standing out and tailoring the resume for the role is going to make a big difference, isn't it? And kind of push people to the front of the queue.
Absolutely. And if you have certain certifications that are relevant, I would put those front and center. I wouldn't have someone dig for them, let them know right away. You should be proud of that too. From what I understand, a lot of those are pretty difficult to acquire. So I'd put them up front.
Yeah, cool. When it comes to interviewing and stuff like that, any kind of tips or hints or do's and don'ts for the listeners? Any advice there for how to interview?
Sure. So a lot of people don't know this, but I think it is important to know, is that when you are interviewing with someone, legally, they are not allowed to ask you about your personal life. But I don't think people know this, because a lot of times the first thing they do is talk a lot about their personal life. And I think that really does hurt them. And so I always tell my interviewees, listen, when they ask you, so tell me about yourself, tell them about your professional self, not your personal self. Because the minute you do mention, you know, your wife, your children, or any other thing that you have going on, you have opened a door that they can walk right through. I think that it's probably better to keep personal talk to a minimum, unless you can clearly see that is going to be beneficial. You have something in common with the interviewer. You definitely do want to hold those close to the chest and not mention it.
Yeah. Well, once it's out there, isn't it?
Definitely. And you never know how someone's going to take that, right? Because you may think it was a good thing, but their personal experiences may differ from yours vastly. So it's just better to leave it alone, I think.
Okay, cool. When it comes to questions and stuff like that, do you think it's good to ask questions at the end, or do you think you should save some for the end? What are your thoughts on that? Or should you ask them throughout the interview? What would you say is most advantageous there for people interviewing?
Either way, because the idea is to be engaged, to show that you're interested, you know, and then to find out what you actually want to know if you have questions. And so I always tell candidates to prepare about 5 questions, because that way, if some of the questions get answered throughout the interview process, and then you get to the end and they say, oh, do you have any questions? Now you've still got 1 or 2 prepared, just in case. So yeah, definitely stay engaged. You want them to know that you care and that you're interested and you're envisioning yourself being on their team and buying into their culture. Definitely.
Yeah, cool. Imagine before we hit record, you were saying you'd recruited a few really good engineers recently. For people listening, what makes them good? What did they do right? What kind of made them so attractive for you and the team?
Like I was saying before, with the government, requirements are everything. And so he was available. It's hard to find someone with 14 years of engineering experience and a PhD that wants to move from another city to come and help you and be a part of the work that you're doing. And I think that was the biggest thing. And then he related, and he was interested in our culture and the work we were doing. He had similar experience that I don't know that I can necessarily talk about, but I think that's it. Unfortunately, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know too much about his experience. I have technical interviewers that kind of handle that. But I think just the fact he had a ton of experience, and it's been really hard to find people that have a lot of experience that want to make a move. Companies are holding on to their senior level people right now, it seems like, at all costs.
Do you know what, man? It's really interesting you say that, because I listen to a lot of recruitment podcasts, and I have heard that when the market dips, everyone would think it would be easier to attract top people, but I've heard that it's actually harder for companies to attract, for maybe for those reasons you're saying. It's really interesting, because now the logic in your head goes, oh, it'll be easier to get really good people, but clearly it's still tough out there.
It really is. I think someone said on LinkedIn the other day that it was an employer market, and I was thinking to myself, no, is it really an employer market? And I think, because I've been able to get a couple of good engineers, possibly, but yeah, I'm like you. I think that was probably a blessing or a fluke. It's still very hard to find good and experienced people. I think that's why everywhere I go, I'm like, tell your kid to be a security network engineer, get your kids in school, because we need them. It's always hard to find security people and engineers because it's a tough job. Not everyone can do it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think back to your point about employer market or candidates market and stuff like that, I just think it depends. With, if I talk about security, I think it just depends which section it is. I think like if in the commercial world, fully remote roles have, generally speaking, I think become more client led. But even in that, like we're working on certain roles at the minute, Splunk roles, they're still pretty candidate led. Obviously anything security cleared is candidate led. I think people see the news and some big tech layoffs and they think, oh yeah, definitely an employer's market. But it depends which section you're in, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If people are getting laid off, that it has gotten more specialized, I guess I would say it that way.
Yeah. So. I think the thing is, I just find it's always cyclical. One year the candidates can be in control, one year the clients can be in control. So always got to remember that and be nice That's to
right.
everyone.
That's right. That's exactly what I told my managers. I was like, look, if it is an employer market, that it's not going to change things for us. We have to take care of our people the way we expect them to take care of us. When I don't like the idea of thinking, oh yeah, now we can get people at a cheaper rate because we're holding the cards. But is that really helping you? Because you're just going to be replacing them in a year when things flip.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like I say, it's taking that slightly longer term approach because the minute the market kicks back in, if they know they've been underpaid or they just took the role because they had to, like I say, you're doing the job again in a year's time. So yeah, it's definitely worth just keeping in mind the pendulum swings both ways. So yeah, Amanda, in terms of communication and stuff like that, I feel communication skills are heavily linked to progression and career growth and stuff like that. Have you got any tips for the listeners on how to enhance their communication skills and be better in this area?
Depending on, are you talking on communication skills as far as when they're job searching or on the job?
Yeah, just maybe when they're job searching, or maybe in general, really, just how can they be better communicators, to get what they want. It could be in the application process, how can they be better communicators all around, but we could do it in the job process,
I would say one thing that I know and that I'm learning even more so now is that we're all connected and we have to stay connected. And I don't work for LinkedIn, but it has been a great tool for me to stay connected. And I love it when the right candidate applies for my job and they find me on LinkedIn and they say, hey, Amanda, I just applied for this job. Will you take a look at my application? Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Because they acknowledge that I have multiple things going on and it reminds me. And so I think if you know that you're qualified for a position, then go for it. Reach out to someone at the company, preferably the recruiter or anyone that can try to help you network as much as possible. The best candidates you ever receive are referrals. You know that. Everyone knows that. And so being a referral is going to increase your chances of getting a job. So definitely just always be networking. I think that's the most important thing. And then as far as after you get on the job, continue learning and continue looking for ways to sharpen your skills or improve. And then let your managers know your plans as far as your career path. You don't have to necessarily find another job to move up. If you talk to the right people and they're aware of what you're looking for, there are companies out here, they want to promote from within. They want people to grow. A lot of times they're just waiting on people to step up and say, I'll learn something new. I'll take on more responsibilities. And so I think that communicating what you want is very important.
Definitely. I really like that last bit, Amanda, about, like I said, just don't be afraid to ask for it. Yeah. You never know when your employer might be needing someone to take on that extra responsibility or whatever it might be. The old saying, if you don't ask, you don't get. And it's sometimes scary to ask or bit nerve-wracking. What's the worst that can happen, hey?
Exactly. And even if they say flat out no, never gonna happen, I've had that happen to me, and they think about it and they come back and they change their minds a lot of times. And if they don't, guess what, where you stand. And so that's okay too. But always let people know what you're looking for, because you never know, they may be able to help you.
Yeah. Do you know as well, it's really interesting to say, so it's nice that you say, so you, when someone applies for a job, you like it when they ping you on LinkedIn. And it's really nice for like me to hear that and the listeners to hear that, because I think there'll be some people out there, they maybe, if they're a bit introvert, maybe they send their resume in And maybe they see you on LinkedIn and maybe they think, oh, does she want me to ping her? Does she want me to, should I do it? Yes or no? So to hear that you like that, it might give people the confidence to see that recruiters do like this and people are busy. And I've had it before, Amanda, where I've hit people up on multiple occasions because I want to talk to them about hiring, or they're a candidate I'm trying to headhunt, or maybe there's someone I'm trying to get on the podcast. And like the amount of times I've messaged people 3-4 times, not straight after each other, but left a bit of time. And you think, oh, are they going to be mad? And they go, thanks for your persistence. It's nice to hear that you like that kind of outreach when people are replying.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if you don't hear back from me right away, like you said, reach out a couple of more times, maybe not back to back. You do want to have timing, give people a chance to respond. But definitely, you've been there and you're like, oh man, I want to reach out to this person. But then you get 5 other positions that just opened up. You've got to get, you never know what's going to happen. And so when they do send that reminder message, you're like, yes, thank you. Because the alternative is that great candidate goes and talks to someone else and then they're working somewhere else before you can turn around and reply. So definitely keep reaching out, especially if you know that you're a good fit.
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what? I like the way you said that again, as new jobs open up and stuff like that. And probably people that are in the process, they probably, Amanda, don't think about it from the recruiter's side always, because it can get hectic, can't it? And stuff happens and stuff goes wrong and people change their minds and people are undecided and they need to ask us more questions. And if it's the right fit and we genuinely think it's the right fit, push them and make sure they know it is the right fit. So it's, yeah, I think that gentle, polite and persistent nudge goes a long way. And times are busy. Day-to-day lives are busy as well, aren't they? You just need that nudge.
Absolutely. We're people too, and we have a lot going on. And that's why recruiters exist, because this is tough. If anyone could do it, there wouldn't be an entire recruiter class of people. Show us a little grace. Give us a quick reminder. And you can tell by the way people reply to you. Some people, some recruiters may be worried to give someone a no. I'm not. I used to be, but now if I look and the person is not a fit or I'm not able to help them, I will just tell them, this is what we're looking for. This is what I see. But here, let me put you on another path. Here's another recruiter or another company or another industry that I think that you could really benefit from going after. And so just try to steer them in the right direction. And they won't always get the answer that they want, but they'll get the best that I can give them and what I think they may need to be successful. And I'll just also say too, like, recruiters love connecting people with jobs. Keep that in mind. And if you can play to that in any way, then you may find some help.
Yeah, and definitely, Amanda. And it's just for everyone listening, that's it. Don't be afraid to essentially follow up and reach back out. It's busy. Even with the applicants you're getting there across multiple ads, it's a lot of applicants. You mentioned there 5-6 new job vacancies opening up that you weren't expecting to open up. And I've been there as well. You sat there and sometimes it can be like late in the afternoon and all of a sudden like extra stuff comes on your desk and it's really urgent. So I think just viewing it from the other person's point of view and realizing that recruiter is dealing with lots of people. So try and be polite, be persistent, try and do things to stand out. I think it makes it a real difference. Also, to summarize as well, that you really like people that step outside the application process. I don't mind that as well. I had it, Amanda, where I'd had a chat. I think I mentioned on another pod, he'd interviewed. I was meant to feedback last thing on the towards the end of the week, and I literally just forgot. The week ran away with me, and he just pinged me on WhatsApp. We ended up actually having a chat over WhatsApp on a Sunday, and it was great. I really didn't mind at all. And it just goes back to, I think, as long as you're nice and friendly and your intentions are good, I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's happened to me before too, that you end up having a good conversation with someone and you can see their drive and their interest, and that gives you something else to go on besides just a resume. Hey, if they're that serious about it, maybe they're worth a second look or a closer look, you know? So for sure, yeah, anytime that you can step out and show initiative, that's just going to be one more pro.
Yeah, but this might be a difficult one to answer. Like for guys and girls out there that have been laid off and stuff like that, have you got any kind of advice or tips or hints for them on how to get back on their feet if they're having a tough time and stuff like that? Any words of wisdom on that front?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is a tough one. Number one, I would say, don't worry about the gap. I think that's a big question online right now. Don't worry about what is it going to look like on my resume that I'm laid off right now. There could be people out there that are looking for your skill set and want you to join their team, and they're going to be excited to know that you're available. Networking, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I hate to see it. If I do see that someone's laid off, I do my best to try to get them through the interview process as quickly as possible to get them back working, especially if they share that with me. Not everyone does. Yeah, sorry, I don't know what to say other than to just keep networking and lots of applications, and you'll get through it. You'll get through it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's like having a look at you mentioned referrals before, and having a look at your network, and probably just to realizing that it's not going to be straightforward. If we tie it back into what we talked about earlier, if there's a lot of applications, again, you've got to be, I think, personalization, persistence. I think all these things make a big difference. And yeah, realizing it isn't anything to necessarily be ashamed of these days. There's some phenomenal, I never thought I'd say this, but there's been some great people laid off. I was of the opinion that if someone had, perhaps they weren't the best, but there's been some really good people laid off in this market. It's just a case of dusting yourself off and just keep going one foot in front of the other, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I guess it's good that stigma is going away, right? Because I would have thought that years ago, oh, if they're laid off, then maybe there's something going on there. But now I'm seeing people with great experience, great personalities, great resumes, and they're laid off. And it's really surprising. But at the same time, they're going to find another place. And then another thing too, is I just thought of when we moved to Florida a couple years ago, there's not as many opportunities for recruiting here. And I took another job that was outside of my purview temporarily while I was looking. And even though I was not happy to do it and it hurt my pride, it humbled me a little bit. That position actually opened doors for me to begin recruiting nationally and then now in defense sector. So you just never know how something is going to play out and how it could turn into something better. So definitely stay positive and keep going.
Yeah, it's, do you know what, Amanda? That's really true about you. You just never know. It's just, I think, especially in recruiting, and if you're in the kind of, I've noticed it from being in the same niche or industry for a long time, it's everything always comes back round, and you might be, let's say, you just go into every conversation open-minded, because I do think if you're in something for the long term, whether it's recruiting or cybersecurity or a particular industry, eventually it does inevitably come back round if you're in something for the long run, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Everything is definitely cyclical, especially with job searching.
Cool, yeah. Have you got many openings on your desk at the minute then? Is it pretty crazy, or have you got a steady Friday? Is it not too bad, not too stressful?
Yep, so it's pretty steady right now. We're in a lull where I live. It's a little bit seasonal, and then the military, a lot of them are getting ready to shift. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we're pretty steady right now. We're always looking for engineers. And so if you know anyone, we definitely want to talk to them. It's a small world down here in Florida.
Yeah. Any other interviews, Amanda, that you've done? Doesn't have to be in this job, could be at any of your roles in recruitment. Has there any been any interviews over the years that have been particularly good that you can think of that the listeners could learn stuff from or take stuff from? Like, what did that guy or girl do in an interview at any point that kind of really stood out to you?
I've done so many. So I think over the years, a lot of them have stood out, and more so the ones that went wrong.
Okay.
That is why. Yeah. And that's why I stress to just be very cautious about what you share about your personal life, because you just never know how that is going to come off to someone. And unfortunately, those have beaten out the good ones, but there have been many good ones. And when you interview someone that wants to buy into your culture and is sincerely interested in the work, I think that those are the people that stand out the most to me these days.
Yeah, cool. And you know what? It's funny that you remember the bad ones, but it's learnings to be had from that. You can learn from a good interview. You can actually, I'd actually say you probably learn more from a bad one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When things are going well, I always think with recruitment, with anything in life, when something's going well, it's easy to progress and be successful and your mindset's good and people are perhaps telling you you're doing well. So you get that adrenaline kick. And I think that, not easy, but certainly a lot easier. I think the time when to actually, if you can keep pushing forward when things are going bad and stuff like that, that is really a skill. And that really means there's a decent chance you're going to be highly successful if you can do well when times are tough.
I completely agree. I've told people before, I do my best work when my hair's on fire. But no, I'm just going along with what you said. I was listening to the news. It was something the other day, and Warren Buffett said, as he is reflecting back on his time in business, that it was actually the times when his businesses were failing that he was having the most fun. Because when things were just humming along and there were no hiccups, no obstacles, it was just business as usual. But when things were going wrong and he felt as if he were in a foxhole and had to struggle his way out, he said that those were the best times looking back. And I really related to that. So don't despise the tough times.
Yeah, but it's like you have to have bad times to appreciate the good times. And if everything was all good, it'd be boring. It's why you hear about, as crazy as it sounds, it's why we hear about these people that win the lottery and they're desperately unhappy because there's nothing to go for anymore. I think there's something about being a human being where we need, not forever, but we need that temporary struggle then to get through it, then temporary struggle again. I think ultimately that actually does make us happy when we've got, as much as we probably don't realize it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's a tug of war, push and pull. We definitely need good times and bad times. And no bad times are fun at the moment. But looking back, you've got to have them. I'm a mother of a teenager. Stressful and struggling times. Those are interesting and pretty common right now. So I feel teenage, like a warrior.
I think that's a daily occurrence, I think, in most households. So there you go.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to say. It's more regular, but luckily it doesn't last forever. Nothing lasts forever, right? So.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's interesting when you talk about Warren Buffett, they're talking about when at times when his businesses were failing. And I think that's a good example of, we all think of someone like him and think, never were his businesses failing, and we just look at him and everything's great and it's all hunky-dory and it's all sunshine and roses. But we just know that isn't the reality for anyone. Sometimes it looks like it is on social media and stuff like that, and social's really good at painting that blue sky picture. But it is just, everyone has these setbacks, and it's how you handle them and how you push forward that really, and that, I mean, that is what success is, being able to push forward when it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
you're cool. Saying that about social media. It does tend to paint a picture of sunshines and rainbows. And it just got me wondering, will there ever be a time when it will be trendy to be more realistic about your life and your business and how things are going? It may be beneficial, but I don't know if we'll ever get there.
I know what you're saying. I think some people do it a bit. Sometimes people, like, they do show that vulnerable side on LinkedIn and stuff like that. And I think it is good to do, because I think people connect with it more, resonate with it more. They can see that it's real. If everything is just always hunky-dory, perfect, you know that it's perhaps not really the case. So, yeah, we should all try and be more open and vulnerable online. I think I've noticed, like, posts that when the odd time when people do, people tend to really connect with that post because they're like, oh yeah, that's really real, I've seen it before.
Yeah, because they can relate.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, I agree.
Amanda, any kind of, it doesn't have to be about recruitment, it can be anything, any kind of like books or podcasts or like material in general that you've consumed, any content, books, anything that have really helped your career grow over the years and helped you along the way?
I've been blessed with a kind of an organic career and natural aptitude for recruiting and great mentors. So I don't know, maybe telling on myself a bit, but I don't read a lot of books on sales and recruiting. Of course, I like your podcast. I like where things are going, and it's been really insightful. I probably should do more of that. I probably should listen to more. But I like the histories. I like to read for self-improvement. Yeah. And so, I don't know, maybe you could make a recommendation for me.
Yeah, I'll send you something. I think there's one book that I love called The Slight Edge, and it's basically just all about, I think it's by Jeff Oslin. I'll send you, Amanda, on LinkedIn. I'll send you a picture. It's basically just all about the compound effects of just doing a little bit more, a little bit here, a little bit there. And it explains it way better than I'm doing now. But it's basically all these little things that make a huge difference over 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And it's leveraging the compound effect and some consistency over a sustained period of time. And then after a while, some people call that talent. And it's just because you've done a bit more each day on a particular area, whether it's recruitment, yeah, security, whatever it might be, and it really adds up to a lot. Yeah,
that sounds very interesting. And I've seen that theory a little bit online where people say make small changes add up to big. I've seen a few things like that. So yeah, that sounds interesting. Check that out.
Yeah, cool. I think sometimes what we do is we get really excited, really motivated, and we try and move heaven and earth, but it lasts like maybe a few weeks. Yeah, yeah. And then I think sometimes just doing a little bit manageable, but maintaining it consistently is where it's at. You mentioned mentors there a few moments ago. We often talk about mentors on the show. So you said that they helped you over the years. Can you talk to us about mentors and how they've helped you and how people listening can get a mentor?
So mentorship is really just anyone that has your best interests at heart and that will help you and guide you, offer wisdom when you need it or when you ask for it. And so I think that for me, it's come from mostly employers, people that are in senior positions over me. I've never been afraid to ask. And I think when you show, or in my experience, I should speak about that, is just when I show a genuine interest in being better at something, or trying to understand something better, and just reach out and be appreciative. I'm so appreciative of the people that have helped me. You know, I've just been very honest with them and accepted their guidance. And yeah, so it's nothing like official, like you hear about people having official mentors. I don't know how that works. I've never had one. Definitely people in your life, in your community, where you volunteer, where you spend your free time or at work. There are people there, and sometimes it's surprising, but I think you just have to reach out and see what happens. That's what I did.
Definitely. Yeah, I think, like you said, don't be afraid to ask. And I think it's so true. When people see that you're making the effort, you want to be the best version of yourself, you want to push forward, you want to progress, I think it's surprising when people see that. It's quite endearing in a nice way. People want to help out, and they want to see you keep pushing forward and stuff like that. So I think when that happens, I think it's nice. And also, you said about it not being official. It's true. You don't need to announce that person's your mentor. That it could just be conversations you're having in the office or anything, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone that's helping you, speaking positivity into your life, helping you reach goals, that's a mentor.
Yeah, this is all right, man. This is modern day podcasting. You're fine. You got is it the cat?
I think he's trying to tell me you pay attention to me.
yeah. That's definitely it. The animals get jealous when their owners are doing podcasts and not talking to them.
Definitely. He's a little older now, so he doesn't try to sit on the keypad anymore. So that's a good thing. But yeah.
He's never sent out an offer to the wrong person then with his paw.
Oh, thank God. Although I could blame him for something if it goes wrong. I hadn't thought of that. You know?
I was going to say, next time something goes wrong, you'll definitely have to blame him. That's a good idea. I like that one.
Yeah, sure. Oh, goodness. Cool. I bet someone somewhere has blamed their cat for something.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. In terms of the rest of the year, then, have you got pretty big growth plans on the recruiting side? Are you going to be looking for a lot more engineers for the rest of this year?
Oh, yeah, sure. You just never know. Obviously, our intention always is to grow engineers, security systems officers, software developers, network engineers. These are all positions that we are always looking to grow in. So definitely. And then because we hire a lot of people that are retired from the military, they work for us for some years and then they want to actually retire and go and spend time with their family. So we'll be backfilling positions like that, but definitely growing.
Mm, cool. Any events or anything like that? I know a lot of people are doing like events and meeting up in person. Is that something you've done or you've got planned or anything?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have a group here. It's like a public-private partnership, Career Source. You may have seen me plugging them on LinkedIn. They host job fairs at least once a month in our community, and they're free. They're a little bit smaller, so we try to stay plugged in there and try to do a couple of bigger ones throughout the year. And then Axient's at every symposium and for space and weapons and defense. And so I may be attending some of those. Nothing on the books yet, but yeah, definitely networking.
Yeah, yeah. I think ever since COVID, I think people are really starting to, after COVID, everyone really got on the remote working, and remote working's really cool and all the rest of it. But I think people are starting to realize the value in meeting up, doing events, building relationships in person. It's not something I do enough of it, but it is nice to do. I keep seeing pictures of events on my LinkedIn feed and I'm like getting FOMO and event envy.
Yeah. Oh, events are so much fun. I get so much out of them. I love to go. I don't know how many candidates I get, but I love to make the connections and find out what other people do. And even though you don't necessarily work with them right away, it takes time. It takes even a couple of years sometimes, but there's usually some kind of return on investment. So I love doing events. And you should definitely do more. And then I wanted to mention too, you said something about remote work. Mm. I feel like in the defense industry, we're in our own little bubble because of the secure nature of our work. We don't get to do as much remote work. So I tend to forget that's what everyone else is doing.
there's more hybrid roles coming about though, isn't there, in the secure, even like TSSCI stuff. They are allowing hybrid, but I think that fully remote element's tricky.
Yeah, we do a lot of hybrid work, which I like that too, because it gives you an opportunity to come in and see everyone and ask questions that you wouldn't normally ask, picking up the phone and just walk by their desk and have a chat.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're doing a lot more with hybrid. I maybe have an unpopular opinion, but I prefer the hybrid model.
Yeah.
If it's possible.
Yeah, I saw a thing. I listened to a podcast actually all about working arrangements, and ultimately that is what most people want. They want some form of hybrid. It's great to be remote. It's really practical. You get more done, get more time to yourself, but it is nice to actually go somewhere and have some element of interaction or office environment or after work drinks or whatever it might be. It's just, I feel it myself, Amanda. I'm remote all the time, and it's sometimes a few months goes by, you're like, God, I've not really seen many people, not physically anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if that's an option for you, but I've even thought about, when I was working fully remote, joining like a shared office space, just renting an office space for a few days out of the month, just to be around people, because we're social beings. We need to be around each other. But too, I think if you are remote, you can always video chat with someone at your job. I don't know why we don't do it more. Just video chat your colleague and have a little conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what we should do? Because there's so much time saved from not commuting. You don't have to drive to work from work. You're perhaps not even always walking to get your lunch anymore. You're just walking over to the kitchen. We really should make more time for it, because we've got a lot more time now since remote working. And I think we're all working probably more than ever in a remote environment with no travel time. And we could easily make time for these things.
Yeah, absolutely. To get used to the new norms.
Just as we come to the end here, on the events and stuff like that, you mentioned like the ROI on it is sometimes 2 years. And it's nice for people to hear that, because I think sometimes, again, people want to look for that instant win and instant kind of ROI on whatever it might be, whether it be posting on LinkedIn or attending an event or just anything in general. And I think to hear that the ROI is 2 years on an event, and I think sometimes the ROI on posting on LinkedIn is 2 years as well. It's just important to have a handle on those timelines and manage expectations correctly, because these things take time, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. 2-3 years sometimes with events, they'll start trickling in, and then before you know it, you'll have new things all the time if you keep going. As far as LinkedIn, I'm fairly new to it, so I'll have to, you know, defer to your experience with that. That's good to know, about a year, and that makes sense. You may get a couple of things, but Yeah, absolutely. Things take time. The best things take time. So you have to be patient and keep going. Let it build up. You can't slow down and stop doing it just because it's not working right now.
Yeah, you're right. It's again, I refer to some of the recruiter podcasts I listen to, and it's people doing the same things every day in, day out for long periods of time, and it does make a difference. I think with a post, and it's about a year. I noticed with this podcast, Amanda, it was like we get new business from it and stuff now, but it was well over a year. It took a year to really kick in, and it does. And I don't think that's a very long time, but I think in the kind of world of LinkedIn and social media, some people probably think a week's a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everything is instant, right? That is surprising. But if you think about it, the best things have always taken time. So I think that's good. And if something is instant, I kind of wonder at this point how long it's going to last.
Yeah, it's true. It's even in, we can probably both refer it to recruitment. You can get, if you really want to, with different things, you can get quick wins in the recruitment world, and a lot of people do. How long does that really last? It probably comes to an end, and there's reputational damage and issues and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, I think that kind of long-term gain, yes, it takes longer, but it's better and more sustainable when you get there, definitely.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think maybe similar, maybe not. Some people call themselves headhunters. I don't like to think of myself as a headhunter because I think in my mind, that just communicates that it is like a quick thing. I like to consider myself more of a fisherman. You cast a wide net, you're playing the long game, you're in it for the long haul. And I don't know if that relates to you or not, but I agree.
Yeah, no, it does. And I always think with that term headhunter, because really, I think if you stay in the same area for a long time and you get to know everyone, a lot of the time you're not headhunting anyway, because you already know the people. You're just reaching back out to people that you've already made a connection with, like you say, whether it's at an event or whether it's on LinkedIn or wherever it might be. It's the term headhunter has been around a while. But yeah, I think if you specialize and you're staying in the same area and yeah, it's maybe a misused term. But yeah, it's been nice, Amanda. We've just reached an hour. I think we've about, have we about covered everything? Have we about smashed it?
I think we have.
Cool. Have you got any plans for the weekend? Are you having a chilled out one, or are you going to just relax?
No, I'm going to chill. It's going to be a stormy weekend here, so not too much. Okay. Just a little R&R. What about you?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's, although I work in the US market, I'm in the UK and it's sunny. So we don't get much sun in the UK. The country comes to a standstill. No one does any work when it's sunshining. We all just chill and just make the most of it because we don't get it very often.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I saw the sunshine and I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. No,
it's sent your rain over this way.
Yeah, we have plenty of it. So there you go.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak.
No, it's been nice. And Alan, thanks, Amanda. It's been really nice to see you. Have a nice weekend and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
So thank you. Bye.